It's the In Route, where friends of the show get a special segment with us. Want to be part of the action? Want to be the newest member of the In Crowd? Well, you know what to do. Hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com, or slide in our DMs on IG @FaderoutePodcast, or drop us a line on X @FaderoutDNZ, and you could be next. Part two of our interview with author Mark Connor starts right now. If you missed part one, check out this past week's episode of The Fade Route. We're here with Mark Connor, the author of It's About Time, Millions of Copies Sold for My Dad. And Mark, you recount the devastating loss of your early manuscript in notebooks in San Francisco. So an event that included the theft of a 170-page manuscript of your first novel. So how did that theft of an irreplaceable work ultimately change your approach to writing? And how long did it take you to embrace the mentality that it was your responsibility now to rewrite that?
Right. You know, okay, so it was part of the experience was in San Francisco where, because I'd met Lawrence Ferlinghetti, the author of A Coney Island of a Mind and you know, the beat poet, and he had signed his book to me, his novel. That was really hard to find, that was out of print. And that was stolen also. I was writing a letter to him and I told him, you know, I got to rewrite that myself and everything. The whole idea, it happened on the east side of St. Paul. I was coming out of the boxing gym after I'd been sparring with Will Grigsby, my teammate who was on his way to becoming a junior flyweight champion of the world. I was late going there, and I had left my backpack on the passenger seat of my car, and there was a brick in the place of my backpack. And that was after having gone to, when I had my last amateur fight, I'd gone to Seattle. I stayed with a friend of a friend and got a job on a fishing boat job. I caught up to Alaska. So anyway, that was devastating. And I cried. I started crying right there, man. I was crying. And yeah. It's Minnesota. It's like 27th, 28th of February. And it's below zero, right? And so now the window's gone in the car and everything. He's like, you know, and I'd look through dumpsters and everything like that, and right away I decided, yeah, I just have to rewrite it again. I just have to rewrite things. I did rewrite that manuscript, and that manuscript's been sitting for years, right? I've got an idea of a trilogy with it, but I haven't gotten around to it. That's part of the whole thing about it, calling my book It's About Time, because I procrastinate a lot of things. I did actually finish the first draft of that in 1996, and then I put it aside. I was trying to revise it a bunch of times. That's when my father had this argument with me about, you know, you've been talking about a big novel forever, you know, and you know, what can I say? I mean, it's just we all have our failures in life, but I didn't have, so I've written a lot since then, and I just thought, you know, some ways I look back and I think there are a couple of things in there that I wrote that I'm kind of glad maybe if they would have gotten published, I wouldn't have been happy with them. You know,
so there you go. All right. So way to look at the writer side of it.
Yeah. And actually I mentioned in one poem, and I mentioned, throughout the story that I'm telling three or four times, I mentioned guardian angels watching over me, watching over my family. And I think in some ways my guardian angel was watching over me then, but this, like, the direction your life's going, this is what happened now, this is what's going to go next. You know, I mean, like, this, you got to figure out where to go from here. And I do believe that God guides us, and that the real challenge for us is to try to figure out humbly and honestly try to discern what God's will is and just pray for the grace to carry it out. Mm-hmm. And the hard thing to do is just to accept some things, like, okay, I just have to do the next thing right now. Yeah. And I'm not in charge.
Right. So
getting
out of the way is super important, and just letting the work happen. More often than not, like, we want to try and take control, but at the end of the day, like, we don't have control.
Right.
Like, it's not in our control.
We don't have control of anything, really. Not too much.
Very little.
Yeah.
Very little.
Sometimes you just have to surrender to what it's going to be. And everything happens for a reason. And you maybe figure that silver lining down the line. But you got to just roll with the punches.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. You got to roll them. But you know what? You learn to roll them. And you learn as you roll. Sometimes you see it open and you come back with one, you know?
Come back harder, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or like, you know, if you watch some of the greats like Roberto Duran, sometimes the way you roll with one, you can come have one coming from the side that you're rolling away from, you know. But don't keep me talking about boxing style for too long, or we'll go on forever.
Nothing wrong with that. This is a sports show after all. We're good with that. But poems like Ever Since and Halfway Around reveal the difficulty and intensity of your personal relationships and that deep emotional life that fuels your poetry. How do the conflicts and desires in your romantic life serve as a catalyst for your writing? And is it a challenge to bear such intense private emotions for public consumption?
It is a challenge to bear such intense private emotions for public consumption. When I write something like that, it's usually to someone that I'm not in communication with, not able to say it to. I put it on paper. So that's how that goes. And then, then the other part of the question, please say that again.
Oh, sure. So how do the conflicts and desires in your romantic life serve as a catalyst for your writing?
This book, I say a number of times that I'm expressing the values of love, family, and life. And I even say it in one poem, in the poem not halfway around the Life So Simple. I say, you know, your guardian angels already talked to mine. Together they've watched us share laughter and argue to the point of crying. You know they're sent by God, who really does exist and is not a tyrant or a terrorist. Rather, he is love, family, life. And, you know, I believe that that's what God is. And in terms of those particular poems, I mean, I'm basically expressing to both of the women in question that this is really all I desired in my interaction with you. And honestly, if this kind of union with you isn't going to happen, what I wish for you is whatever is the will of God for you, because that's what's the best thing for anyone, right? That's what I'm getting at with those particular poems. But in terms of you can specify that question one more time. But what's the motivation?
So how is that conflict? How is that desire in that romantic life? Like, how is that inspiring your writing? Like, how is that how is that fueling the fanning the flames, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, so the thing is, those particular poems are written to women who were quite a bit younger than I was, you know, in my 40s, and they were in their 20s, and I had some good.
Mark, proud of you.
Well, here's the thing. So the thing is, like, you know, I've just to be straight up honest about this, I actually made a recommitment to my Catholic faith, and as soon as I did that. In a few years, as soon as I did that, younger women just started appearing into my life. Mm. And so I'm not in the seduction mode because I'm recommitted to my Catholic faith. And it's kind of, it's just a strange thing because, you know, my whole desire has always been to have family. And you really, the best way to pursue that is not by being a seductive person, right?
Right, because, right, right.
because you want to woo. I mean, I think it was the movie Dead Poets Society where Robin Williams says to his
yes,
he says to the students, he says, "Does the Boys Academy?" He says, "No, all those reasons you give for poetry aren't the reason. The reason for poetry is to woo women, and it is, but it's not to woo women so that you can just, you know." Right. So you can just rack up your trophies, you know.
What I mean? Right.
And so it's supposed to be
so you can, you know, eventually be monogamous, right? Have monogamous one partner.
And the truth is that in contemporary American society, you have to get to a point where you're face to face in conversation where you can actually express this is, you know, what my values are and everything. And that's not, I mean, you know, most people think if you're not having sex after the third date, then you shouldn't be.
You're right.
Yeah.
So there you go, man. It's a tightrope to walk, man.
100%. And you know what? In my own life, I found that when you're not looking, that's when things happen for you. Like when you're actively out of the way and you're not, you know, you're not actively pursuing something, that is when you're confronted with it. And the hardest thing you can do, and this is for, and you know, your story resonates a lot with me, especially like your father, all of that. And it's a tale of vulnerability. Like, how are you like exposing yourself? You're bearing everything to try and find this level of intimacy. And that's really like something special.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was actually thinking about that over the last couple of weeks. There's this place called the Demontreville Retreat Center, and it's a Jesuit retreat center just outside of St. Paul. And I've gone there the last 5 years, and it's a silent retreat. And I'm just kind of trying to figure out for the next year, you know, what direction is God trying to send you. And at that time, I was thinking about this, and I'm thinking about this more the last couple of weeks, is that, you know, I mean, whoever comes into my life, I'm just going to, you know, you can't just be too blunt. You can't just sit right because you don't scare people away. But I'm just going to be honest about the whole thing, you know, because if the earlier you can explain yourself and make someone understand this is the direction I'm going in life, do you want to go this direction or not? The easier it is, you know, to figure out whether you go forward or not. And two, it's honest, so you're not playing a game. You're not wasting her time. You're not wasting your time. You know what I mean?
100%. And that also kind of like ties back to what we were talking about before, in terms of like hiding behind a screen and how things have changed. And you know, the personally, like my fiance and I, we met online, and it was just an instant click. And it was one of those things that, you know, I wasn't necessarily looking for her, but I found her, and it's been, you know, it's been nothing but exceptional ever since. And it's exactly what I could have possibly hoped and asked for. And I'm thankful every day that I found her.
Well, congratulations. I hope and pray that, you know, that you do get married as you're planning, and also that you have, you're blessed with, the right amount of kids.
Well, oh, man. I already have two stepkids, not officially, but, you know, that's, you have a nice little family plus a cat. So, we'll get you out of here on this one, Mark. The book blends memoir, personal reflection, and poetry, and it's unique. It is an absolutely unique manuscript. But why did you choose to structure the book by wrapping the stories in context around the poems you've written? And, you know, as opposed to presenting the poems as a simple collection of collected works.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the point at the end of chapter one where I talk about I had this argument with my father, how come you haven't published a book? Shouldn't you be able to publish about five novels? But I always talked about being a novelist. I always liked writing. I always liked fiction and the presentation of, you know, novels and short stories more than poetry. I like poems. I can write poems. I can recite them. But they're usually one shorter piece. I think that kind of novelistic form is more of an entertaining and more of a fulfilling kind of a experience for the reader. And, you know, Lou Reed once said about his music. He said a record album should be consumed kind of like a novel. You should listen to it from beginning to end. And I like that kind of, if I'm going to be presenting poetry, I like presenting it more in a form that is going to be a bigger production than just a list of poems, you know. And the guy I mentioned, you know, I keep mentioning this guy in interviews, and I guess he's lucky I mentioned him. But the two jacket quotes on the back are Danny Klecko and Dan Flynn. Dan Flynn published this book called he's the first guy I showed the manuscript to, called Famous Minnesotans Past and Present. He's listed in the credits as my literary advisor. But Danny Klecko, I mentioned him in the book itself, in the story. The first three poems, I premiered them in 2019 at the downstairs in the Clown Lounge at a place called the Turf Club in St. Paul. And the thing is, he just kept telling me, publish a chapbook, publish a book of poems. I said, no, I got this novel I want. We're going to, no, publish. And so I was going to get a book published and he's going to help me. And then, like I say, metaphorically, there was such a big snowstorm when the night I premiered it, you could say it got stuck in the snow because it went by the wayside. And then I wrote this book. When I decided I'm going to write this book, I said, I knew what I was going to write. I knew what the story was. And I'm just going to write, okay, here are these poems, and this is the story going with them. And so I'm writing kind of about what led up to writing that poem and so forth. I just like the way it goes. I visualize it as being, I kind of visualize it as if you could make it into a movie or anything like that. You know, it's kind of the story of my life. So I figured it was kind of a more interesting way to present those poems, and the poems kind of enhance the story. So okay. That was the decision to do it. That's what really led me to deciding to structure it this way.
It's funny you mention that, because it does feel like song lyrics and liner notes now that you mention it. Kind of like an old school 45, just having that, you know. It's really cool. That's a pretty novel approach, no pun intended.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, you know what, it's cool, man. It's cool. And then I added I was talking with a friend, you know, who was, because originally I called it "It's About Time" parentheses my essay of poems, and it just wasn't right. And that Klecko, that Danny Klecko told me, you gotta lose the title, man. That doesn't work. You can't put that on a bookshelf, in a bookstore. There's no way to market it because it's too esoteric, too many people. And a lot of people have books called "It's About Time." So I was just thinking, talking to my friend, I said, I'm gonna call "It's About Time." Millions of copies sold for that. And he's like, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. But you know,
watch me.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's kind of a smart-ass way of saying it, but it also kind of, it's a subliminal thing. Like, hey, you look at it, like, did this sell millions of copies? Maybe I should look at it, you know. But and it's also, you know, I talk about the concept at one point in the book of amphibolies. It's an amphibole, a logical fallacy, meaning the ambiguity of language, it means something. But then it could, in different contexts, it could mean one or two other things. So, you know, because the other thing it could mean is, it's about time millions of copies sold for that. I mean, yeah, man, it's about time, you know, so we got to sell them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of my sales pitch, really.
I love it.
Love it. So, you know, it's one of the things I say to my students, what's the one thing we can't get back? And that's time. You know, that is it. And it's to light a fire under them and give them that sense of urgency. But, you know, it's also like, it's the long game. You play the long game as much as you are in the short game. So it's kind of.
I hear that.
Well, award-winning author, It's About Time, millions of copies sold for Dad, Mark Connor, thank you for joining us on the In Route. And where can our listeners find you? Where can they find your book? And what do you have coming up next?
Okay. You can find the book. You can get it through two sources, Amazon, which is the most common source. And there's another platform called Lulu, L-U-L-U. And you can get to both those platforms by going to boxersandwritersmagazine.com, which is all spelled out. It's a website that I have. And that's going to take you all either to Amazon or to Lulu, whichever one you decide to purchase it through. If you go now, it's still only $14.99. It's going to go up to $20. So over the next month, probably you might get the discount on it. So that's where you can get it. I did say I do have a website called boxersandwritersmagazine.com. Now, most of the stuff you'll find on there is old stuff. I haven't been putting a lot on there. I'm planning to put some more on there. Like I said, I had the interruption of my rhythm over the summer, but I do have a Substack that's called Irish Catholic Punch Drunk in St. Paul, and that's at markconnoricpunchdrunk.substack.com. And so those are the main things. And I got a regular Facebook page under my name, and I, you know, got a regular Instagram at Writing Boxer, but don't have a lot of professional stuff up on those. Okay. And awesome. Then people can if they're in the Twin Cities, they can go to through BoxersWritersMagazine.com can find out about my services as a boxing trainer. And, you know, hopefully one of these days soon I'm going to see you guys in New York, because I've threatened to move there and be a trainer out there for a long time, but I'm going to take a trip out there soon, so it'd be really cool to you know, say hello to you guys.
Yeah, we'd love to see you. We actually had a boxing trainer on a couple weeks ago. Liam Martinez, who's from Mount Vernon, and he's really heavily into the boxing training world right now. So, yeah, that'd be great. If you come, definitely hit us up. Love to meet you. Love to talk to you. You got some amazing stories, and I'm sure, you know, this book is literally just the tip of the iceberg for you. I think writing, man. Just keep writing.
100%.
You've got a lot of talent, and I know it's hard, you know, dealing with the rhythms of life, but don't let that stop you from writing. I think you've got some stories to share with people, and I think they'd be losing out on what you have to offer if you didn't do it.
Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate that. Those are some very encouraging words, and that's very motivational, man. I'm gonna keep that with me.
100%. And if you want to be a guest on the In Route with us, if you want to join the In crowd, hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com, slide in our DMs on IG at faderoutpodcast, drop us a line on X at faderoutdnz, and you could be our next guest. Mark Connor, thank you for coming on, brother. We'll talk to you soon, and hit us up if you're in New York. We'll chop it up. We'll talk boxing. We'll talk whatever you want.
Oh, man, that sounds great. God bless you guys. Thank you for everything. I really appreciate it. This was a wonderful opportunity, man.
Thanks for listening to this episode of our podcast. If you liked what you heard and you want to hear more, be sure to like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Leave us a review, rate us 5 stars, turn on subscription notifications, and share on social media. Tell your friends and spread the word.